Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Hello, I'm Roger Watterson. This is the fourth in our series of 15 programmes in which we meet all of the candidates seeking a seat in the 2011 general election. Douglas has four constituencies, each returning two members to the House of Keys, and today we talk to the three candidates contesting this two-seat constituency of Douglas South to discover their ideas, policies and political philosophy. But first, here's Dan Walker, who's been taking a look at the makeup and the history of the area.
All eyes are on the constituency of Douglas South at the moment as it plays host to the Commonwealth Youth Games. For years a wet and muddy fixture on the footballing map, after much humming and hawing and a spot of name-calling between Douglas Council and Tynwald, the bowl finally underwent a major rebuild and has emerged as the shining centrepiece of the island's national sports centre. Competitors at the bowl will find the skyline dominated by the glassy edifice of the Pulrose Power Station. At the time of the last general election, you'd have been forgiven for thinking it would come to dominate Manx politics. Had it not been for bigger shocks such as the collapse of Kempthing, Singer and Friedlander and the one-sided renegotiation of the VAT agreement with the UK, the funding scandal at the MEA would still be generating major column inches. As it is, the affair has saddled the publicly owned authority with huge debts, which, coupled with rises in energy prices, mean the Manx public have had to come to terms with expensive electricity. The residents of the Pulrose estate, at least, will be sitting pretty in their nice, warm, newly rebuilt houses. No doubt the residents of Annaco will be clamouring for similar treatment of their properties, but the question for successful candidates will be where the money comes from. As well as power and housing, the constituency contains the Hills Meadow and Middle River industrial estates, the capital steam railway station, and what, at the moment, is the island's only Tesco store. Shoppers seem to be attracted to the store like moths to a flame, coming into the area from across the island. Those who don't bother with home delivery, that is. In fact, so busy is a shop, some people might think it's easier to get elected to the House of Keys than to find a parking space at rush hour. It could have been so different. The supermarket chain sought to expand the shop and car park to cope with the demand. A public inquiry followed. Shoppers seemed mostly enthusiastic. Other retailers were not so keen, fearing a Tescoisation of the island. The independent planning inspector eventually turned down the plans, citing issues with the size and location, but mostly the traffic congestion which he thought would ensue. Anyone who's tried to get off the halt sign at Bank Hill during rush hour can't help but sympathise with his decision. Finally, an interesting note for fans of electoral facts. None of the candidates have had to leave the constituency to take part in this debate. Manx Radio is snugly nestled in the eastern extremity of the constituency, along with the residents of the former Douglas Head Hotel. Before the candidates get ahead of themselves, though, I can guarantee that doesn't mean they'll get an easy time from our host.
Well, Dan Walker was taking a brief look at Douglas South. So now to the candidates. They are, in alphabetical order, as they will appear on the voting paper, Kate Beecroft, an accountant, company director, Braddon Commissioner and Liberal Vannin Party candidate. David Cretney has been MHK for Douglas South since 1985. He served as minister at various departments and is a Manx Labour Party candidate. And Bill Malarkey. He was elected to Douglas South in 2006 on a Liberal Vannin ticket, but subsequently quit the party, and he's served as political member on various government departments since. Now, throughout all of the programmes, we invite the candidates to speak to us for a maximum of 2 minutes without interruption on any subject of their choice, and this we also do in alphabetical order. That means that the first to speak in today's programme is Kate Beecroft.
Good evening, Roger, and good evening, listeners. As Roger said, I am a member of the Liberal Vannin Party, and I have been since 2006. I'm really proud to have been selected to represent the party because I want to be part of the team that brings about the changes we really do need if things are to be improved, particularly for the next generations. Time tonight is limited, but these are just a few of my reasons. Liberal Vannin is the only way to bring in the systems of good governance that are badly needed. I mean, after all, turkeys don't vote for Christmas. Voting for Liberal Vannin is the only way to bring about change. A vote for the old guard will be just a vote for more of the same, and that simply is not good enough for the Isle of Man. The current members of government who are seeking re-election are saying that you need experienced politicians in these difficult times, But don't forget, it is their own experienced hands that have got us into this mess. Quite honestly, if we have another government as bad as the last one, I dread to think the state we will be in another 5 years. As a party, we are the only ones who are able to have a coherent set of policies that are published before the election and that do not change after the election. In other words, our policies are not binned after the election. The economy and government spending are of prime importance if we are to have the benefits of a thriving nation, but we must provide the next generation with an education appropriate to their abilities, and we must care for our elderly and vulnerable. Liberal Vanin will protect frontline services in health and education rather than just paying lip service, which is what is happening at the moment. I have gained a lot of political experience during the past few years, partly as a Braddon commissioner, but primarily I've been lucky enough to work closely with Peter Caron, our party leader, on a number of issues, such as formulating a Plan B, which was a travel levy bill, when it looked like we were going to lose the reciprocal health agreement.
Right, thank you, Kate. That's the 2 minutes. And now to David Cretney.
Thank you for the warm welcome received when I've called to see you at your homes and your ongoing support. The next 5 years will be the most challenging in decades, and I believe I am best equipped to represent South Douglas and our island. 26 years of experience, 15 as a minister in tourism, trade and industry, and community, culture and leisure, plus a wealth of other commitments politically and in our community. I am a team player, working for the good of our island rather than shouting from the sidelines. In a world of some cynicism of politicians, I do not make rash promises before an election. I am someone you know and trust all the time. I get things done, leading the moves to redevelop Paul Rose, delivering the refurbished Villa Marina and the National Sports Centre on time and in budget. Can you remember winter work schemes, 3,000 people out of work, no financial reserves, no social legislation and the icebox houses in Paul Rose? Since then, 26 years of unbroken economic growth, 95% of capital schemes delivered on time and in budget, significant financial reserves and modern employment rights. As DTI Minister, I worked with private businesses to build and diversify our economy. I overturned a decision to cease funding for apprentices. I delivered the Enterprise Act to support a wide range of business development and provide employment. Recently, I've had to take difficult decisions about improving department efficiency. Now, all candidates, including a few Tynwald members who seem to be unaware of the global recession, are talking about it. If we're really serious about protecting frontline services in health, education and community safety, much more must be done. I am open, honest, accountable, and my guidelines are common sense and fairness. I was the MHK who brought forward the need for freedom of information legislation. You cannot put a price on our quality of life, but I am determined, with your support, to ensure its protection in the 5 years ahead.
All right, David, thank you. And now, last but not least, to speak, Bill Mullarkey.
Thank you, Roger. Yes, Bill Mullarkey. I'm married to Carol, three daughters, and I live in South Douglas. I was lucky enough to be elected, and I thank the people of South Douglas, in 2006, as Roger mentioned, as a member of the Liberal Vanin Party. I felt after 18 months within the party that I was not serving the people of South Douglas as I had intended to do so. So, since leaving the Liberal Vanin Party, I have been in the Department of Home Affairs, where I was first given the responsibility for the drug and alcohol strategy, then the youth justice team, then adding on to probation, and latterly probation and prison together. While serving in the Department of Home Affairs, I was offered the Department of Social Services within the DHSS, as was at the time, to which I was quite flattered. It's been quite a challenge for the last two plus years within the department. Certainly social services is a very, very complex department to be dealing with. I can honestly say that within my time within the departments, I have saved government money. I can quite easily mention over £1 million of savings where I have used my business abilities working from within government with civil servants for the good of the Isle of Man.
Well, thank you. Now, that was Bill Malarkey, and before him, David Cretney, and before that, Kate Beecroft, the three candidates in Douglas South. Well, here we are now to talk about some of the issues of the day, some of the issues of the future, and maybe some of the past. Bill, the word that often creeps in, a lot of political phrases, but one of the words that often creeps in is the word vision or visionary, my vision from the future. Now, your manifesto, you do refer in one of the lines, I quote, we need to be fit, nimble and visionary. What did you mean by that?
Well, of course we have to be fit. To be fit, we have to cut our cloth according to the money we have in. So government, I think, is well overstaffed in places. But, you know, we've had so many good years that I don't think we've approached this early enough. Suddenly we've had a wake-up call. So it's time to, and as I've said in the manifesto, it's time to make government fitter, but I do not believe in mass redundancies, because that will only cause the island to go into recession. We can't afford redundancies. So we have to, through natural wastage, bring government fit for purpose. The vision for the future is where we want to be. And I don't mean, Roger, in 5 years' time. The problem we have is we're going to have a new term, new government going in, who will have a five-year plan. The island needs a 10, 15-year plan so we know where exactly we want to be in the future. And unfortunately, we haven't been doing that in the past.
Does our political system allow for that, though? I mean, there's this five-year cycle where people, particularly serving members, look to the end of that cycle for all variety of reasons, including electability.
That has to stop. I think this is where part of our problem. You will have read in my manifesto, I say, we have entrepreneurs on this island who are retired, who bring a lot to the island, who love our island. We need to get them people, them professional people around the table, and let's have a long-term plan for where we want to be. We talk about abrogation. We can't go down that road at the moment.
Can I just come in on that when you're talking about the political bit of it? Because you want the entrepreneurs and you want everything else. But while you've still only got this five-year term that everybody looks for, because they don't know if they're going to be in government after that. And I'm sure David will agree with it because he is leader of the Labour Party. This is why you need party politics. So you can have a strategy going forward 10, 15, 20 years into the future.
You could have
if you're not elected the next time, that vision doesn't die. That those policies don't die.
No,
they
I
carry on
with
whoever takes... Well, yes, you obviously do because you left us.
Indeed, but, I did.
That carries on. This is why you need that political stability that party politics can offer.
But this business about... There's a difference between a vision and there's a difference between policies, isn't there? The hardcore policies.
Yes.
But what's going to be thrown to the next Tynwald in the next 5 years, you can't write that down on a piece of paper. You don't know what's coming.
Exactly.
No, but you can have your strategies in place. You know where you want to get to. As a party, as a group of people with new members coming in and new members taking the place of other ones as they leave the political arena, the vision carries on. The strategy to get to that vision carries on. It doesn't die when somebody retires or doesn't get re-elected.
Well, let's come back to that in a minute, because David Cretney is a member of a party, and a party that's been around quite a long time in the Isle of Man. But it does seem, David, that the public hasn't got a stomach for it.
Well, I disagree completely with that. Every time the Manx Labour Party has stood in elections since 1911, there have been members returned to Tynwald. So I think that's a good, consistent support over a long period of time.
Not necessarily the Labour Party, but I said for party politics in general.
Yes, well, where I would agree is that I don't believe there is a big taste for party politics in its traditional form when they see what goes on in the United Kingdom, the Yabu politics.
Oh,
what
I
we
want
need,
that.
What, absolutely,
no.
What we need to do in the Isle of Man, and what the Manx Labour Party and what I've done, and before me, Eddie Lowy and Bernie May have done, is we, when invited to join the Council of Ministers, we have taken that position up on the basis that working with independents, we can best serve the people we represent, and we believe that's been successful. There's no question that has been successful.
And in doing that, you bring forward the policies of the Labour Party without party politics. So that's the
difference. One question though, David, because I honestly don't understand this bit, and I'm sure you will tell me. You're the leader of the Manx Labour Party.
You said that twice now, not the leader of the Labour Party.
I do beg your pardon,
no problem.
I stand corrected. You're a member of the Manx Labour Party,
yes.
So obviously you've got their policies, their principles, which you abide to. How do you reconcile that when you take the collective responsibility document in the Council of Ministers?
Yeah, well, that's quite clear. Anybody who knows about the collective responsibility knows that if you have any policies in advance of taking on a minister's position, those policies are acknowledged and you are allowed to retain those policies and you're allowed a free vote on that.
Exactly, and this happens within departments with my members as well. If you have, and I stand by the manifesto that I went to the last election with, and as Kate well knows and other members know, that if there was something in that Liberal manifesto, I support it even after leaving the party,
yeah.
Peter Caron, and the policies, because it's what I believe in.
There's something of a fallacy sometimes,
yes.
That the only people who question or what's going on are those in a party. Independent members have always questioned the executive. I think the questioning of the executive and the scrutiny of the executive is going to be even more important in the time ahead, mm-hmm. And that's why it's really good that these committees have been will be established straight after the election.
But as a member of the Labour Party, you joined in.
Absolutely.
Right.
We've made that conscious decision because we believe that was better for the people we represent.
Right. Peter Caron, as a member of the Liberal Vadan Party, did not. So is that not a negative approach, a destructive approach, in other words, sniping from the sidelines?
No, not at all. We don't just snipe from the sidelines at all. The questions are asked, which a lot of the time he's the only one who will ask those questions, and they need asking. A lot of the things need brought to the attention of the public. But it's not a question of sniping. If you look at the voting history, the majority of the time, Peter actually votes with government. It's only when it's something contentious that he doesn't believe in. And that's what gets the headlines, because let's face it, it's not going to make very good news for somebody to go, blah, 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 and everyone agreed with this. It's only when there is something that's slightly contentious and
I have to contradict you there. In the 2007 first budget I ever sat in for Liberal Vanin, right, Peter Caron, it was one of the finest budgets the island had seen for some time. Peter Caron even stood up and said how good a budget it was. And I got a note across the chamber from Peter Caron telling me I had to vote against it because I had to vote against what I considered to be at the time an extremely good budget. There was no alternative budget on the table. There was any alternatives whatsoever. And yet I was instructed to vote against what I considered at the time an extremely good budget.
Can I make the point right now, Roger? And I know you said you're not chairing this, but it's common knowledge. Bill got in on the Liberal Vanin ticket. He left us.
No, I dispute that. I got in spite of being...
He got in on the Liberal Vanin ticket. He left the party. In my opinion, and the opinion of a lot of other people, he should have had a by-election to see if people still wanted... Hang on, as an independent. But I do not want to spend this programme going over Bill's misdemeanours of the past. I'm here to tell people about the next 5 years, what we're going to do in the future.
Roger, I'm going to answer that one question there, because I don't want to talk about Liberal Vanin rest of the evening. No, because you have just said I should have stood down and had a by-election. In 2001, Mr. Caron was elected to the House as a member of the Labour Party. In 2004, he resigned from the Labour Party. He did not step down. Oh. He did not make a by-election. So why does the Liberal Vanin have a role for the other?
I've just said I want to move. I want
well, yes, because you haven't got the answers.
Forgive me, Robert. Of course I have.
Forgive me, Kate, but you may want to move on. But yes. There was one question that you brought up in your introduction, in your 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that was, of course, that you were banging the party line, not the policy line. And that's what's drawn this conversation into it. Now, if you want to move on, let's just do that, because I asked first of all Bill about a vision for the future, and we only just barely skirted around that before we got
long to term.
But David, looking at your manifesto, I mean, I find it a very interesting document, but you do dwell a lot of the time on the past. There's very little about the future in it.
That's because part of what I'm dwelling upon and part of what I'm trying to make quite clear for the public, because I don't believe government has communicated as well as it should have done in the last 5 years, is what the facts are, rather than some of the fiction that's being put around by some people at this election. And so what
well, as give me, I give me an example of the fiction.
Well, there's all sorts of fiction. There are all sorts of stories. You know, if you talk about capital schemes, as I said in my opening remarks, 95% of those are delivered on time and in budget. We also have, if we look at the reserves now, the government reserves in 2006 was the first time they topped 1 billion. They're now 1.9 billion. We've got endorsement from the IMF, from the OECD, and from the Foote Report. We've got Standard & Poor's, Moody's, AAA rating. This island is a good news story.
Correct.
We have to work hard for the future, harder than ever we have. But some of us were around in 1985 as I said again at the beginning, when there were 3,000 people out of work, at the moment there are about 800 and something people out of work, which is a personal tragedy for each and every one of them, but we have to put things into context. We are in a better place, but we need to ensure that that continues to be the case. And if you look globally, if you look at the countries around us, look at the mess they're in and look at the mess we're not in.
Right, now look at the future then. Let's take your future. I asked Bill what his vision for the future are. Accepting everything that you say, we have a problem now.
Absolutely.
How do we handle it and where do we go to? How do you see it working out?
Well, what I would say is that my part will be, because I am experienced, because I was around in the more difficult times, that I am prepared to take difficult decisions before an election. I've demonstrated that. So a number of people have put off decisions until after the election. I think that's quite clear. But we need to make sure our house is in order. We need to work with business going forward in a cooperative way, as I've demonstrated as when I was Minister for Trade and Industry. I worked very hard with a number of private businesses. I brought forward the Enterprise Act, which gives a wider scope of assistance available to businesses. We need to continue to be innovative. We need to continue to make sure that Isle of Man's story is marketed far and wide. I think that's another area we can improve on.
These are very fine phrases, but Kate Beecroft in her manifesto, the opening line virtually of the manifesto says there is a widespread feeling of disappointment. How can you justify that if you listen to what David said about the success story?
I mean, yes, the Isle of Man government
must be talking to different people than David and me.
Success stories. There's no two ways about that. We're not going to knock everything that's happened. That would be foolish and it would be untrue. The island has had a success story. The last 5 years have been dreadful and it's been so many mistakes the last 5 years. This is why there's this feeling of disappointment and concern, because people do have genuine concerns about the next 5 years. If I may, I would like to put my vision for the future, as you're calling it, because I see this as an absolute golden opportunity for the Isle of Man. We've had a wake-up call, and when that happens in business or in your private life or whatever, you actually stand back, you take stock, and you look at areas that you could be doing better. You look at where you can trim the fat off things without causing problems and causing pain, if at all possible. And you move forward. And I think the Isle of Man has been built on what I call sand in a lot of times, because we're very reliant on other laws in other jurisdictions. We're always trying to stay ahead of the game, which is absolutely right. But we're not in control of our own income because of the revenue sharing agreement. We've got no control over so much of our income. I think we need to take steps to try and get more control, but to diversify into things that are solid and have solid foundations, that can't just leave the Isle of Man on a whim when a law changes in another country.
But isn't that the basic policy of Tynwald as it stands today?
That's exactly what's been going on.
Yes. Have they been fulfilling it?
Gross spending for 2011-2012 has been held at the same level as 2 years ago. We've had savings of £40 million plus an extra £11 million, because we're doing exactly that. We're cutting the fat, and we have been doing that. Staffing, for example, has been cut by 8%. That saves £26 million. 400 jobs have been saved in the last 2 years, and those are jobs that have not been filled again when they become vacant.
But doesn't that mean that the government... I mean, it happens to everybody. If you've got a lot of money coming into your household budget, you probably spend more than you should. And I think this is what's happened over the years. We've had too much money, and we've spent it
I never overspend my household budget. Yes, I don't think somebody should be electing somebody who overspends their household budget.
But that's what government has been doing. If you can suddenly trim all this money, it means that you have been spending too much.
I think we may well have become a little bit complacent over the years.
Nobody's disputing. I think past governments have been complacent. I mean, let's go to the last election. It was the worst government ever. We'll go back 5 years. I think then it was the worst government ever. You can always say that. Everybody's saying these are challenging times. The last 5 years have been extremely challenging. Some of the challenges that's been thrown towards this particular government, and I'm not defending the Council of Ministers here, because we've all been in Tynwald having to make very difficult decisions with regard to the KSF banking we've had to put up with, the reciprocal agreement being withdrawn, the VAT coming forward. These are decisions and things that we've had to deal with.
And haven't dealt with shining glory.
Before we start dwelling too much in the past, all the time, what I'm trying to find out, and we're still, Kate, before we do move on, I'd like to go back to that question from you again. What is you or your party's idea of what the Isle of Man will be in the next 5 years? What's your vision for it?
On a lot in 5 years or 10 years or 20?
In
a given period. Well, obviously, we've got, as I said before, we've got to get more diversification into real things that are solid on the Isle of Man, that don't just split off. But I think it's a problem that's, there's never one single solution, never is. You've got to have more control over your income. You've got to increase that income.
Okay, now,
and you've got to look at spending.
You actually referred in your manifesto to this. You talked about uncontrolled and irresponsible spending.
And I think we have done that in the past because money has been flowing so freely. I think we have spent money in areas that we shouldn't have done.
I said it
in Timworld. Richmond Hill was a thing we couldn't afford. I voted against it. I believe the runway extension of 29 million, I think we were bluffed a little bit into that. I don't think we really needed it. Sorry, Ramsey Pier, I love my heritage, but 1.8 million just to stop it rusting anymore. Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't find that. I find that irresponsible.
Well, this is housekeeping, of course, and you have an opportunity at least once a year to have your say on the overall housekeeping of government at budget time. So if all these items are identified and they're in the budget book, they're in the red book or the pink book, why didn't you vote against
them? I have voted against them. I voted against Richmond Hill, Ramsey Pier, the airport extension. I voted against, as each motion comes forward. I'm not voting against an overall budget, which is good, but as each item comes forward, we should be able to vote on which issue we consider to be right or wrong. Yes. Not just blanketly to say, oh, I don't like one thing, I'll vote against the whole lot.
You all know what happens, members have the opportunity during the budget process to express their concerns about individual schemes, and then when they come to the individual schemes, they have the right to vote against them whilst voting for the budget overall in principle. That's what happens, it's a matter of fact.
Don't you think Joanne Watterson's idea for bringing forward, so was it February he wanted the papers to be brought out, I think, so that people had a chance to look at them properly rather than just 6 days?
I wouldn't argue with that at all.
And having to keep them secret.
I wouldn't argue with that at all. We should be, especially in times where money is really tight. You know, we are not financial experts. We, as members, should be given more time and more chance to consult, you know, what a budget means long term. Mm.
Well, let's just take it where we go to from here. Depending on who is elected and how it's elected, that you talk about all the positives of government, and David's given us quite an illustration of quite a number of them. But there is a perception, there's a great deal of importance at election time, David. I'm sure you will agree. Not necessarily even the fact that supports that perception, but how people see things by whatever means.
And that's what I was saying. I'm not convinced the government has communicated its successes well in the last 5 years. That's something, as you know, I've always been very keen in connecting with the public, making sure the public are on board with what we're trying to do. I don't think we've done that as successfully as we could have done.
Can I just say that's quite extraordinary given the amount of budget that you have for press releases and PR people? You know, it really is quite extraordinary if you feel that they haven't done that job well enough for you.
But they can only do a job as well as the information they're given.
Well, then it's government's fault if they haven't been able to do it.
I think I'm saying that we can do things
so
better.
So you haven't given the PR people the right information to get your message across,
let's take it a step further, David.
This public perception at this election, all the candidates that I've spoken to report the same thing, that people feel that the general, leaving aside the good points, general dealings with the United Kingdom government were weak and mishandled, that the reciprocal health agreement was not working very well, that the Council of Ministers is far too much operated by the high levels of the civil service, and it goes on like this. Now, the question of it is, that is the perception.
There's
another house coming in, and the argument could be, well, the same senior officials are still in position, so what's going to be different?
Well, it's down to the individuals who the electorate elect Never underestimate the intelligence of the electorate. The electorate are not stupid. They see what's going on in the world right now. They read newspapers. They see their television. They see the countries that are in problems all around the world. And what they want to have are people who have common sense, people who are prepared to challenge their civil service, people who are prepared to take advice from outside. I'm one of those people, and that's why I think...
Can I just say, I don't think it's just you sort of glossing over it as public perception. I think it was very realistically illustrated over the reciprocal health agreement. I mean, Eddie Teer announced that there was nothing to be done, and then they went off down to London to negotiate. You don't say there's nothing to be done, then go and negotiate. And then, obviously, there was something that could be done.
But that, again, Kate, forgive me, is the past. I'm looking now to that we identify
the problem.
Yeah, but
that's why you're saying it's public perception. It's not. It's reality.
Let's get the public perception right, and let's go back. I don't want to go back over the last 5 years, but let's find out where we're coming from now, how we're facing the next 5 years. Let's have a look. We're forecasting growth of 4%. There's nowhere else in Europe forecasting growth like that. We've got unemployment figures out this week, 1.9%. Who else has got that? I've got 1.4 million in my figures. I'm now being told it's 1.9 million. Who else around us has got that type of reserves?
Yeah,
on top of that, we still have our AAA rating. We are still on the OECD whitelist now. We are coming from this from a very good position.
But is the growth coming from government or the private sector?
Perception is only created by those who aren't part of it, who don't know what's going on. We are in a good position going forward.
David may have a point that if people don't know what's going on, then the message hasn't been distributed as well as it should be.
Just answer Kate's question. Clearly, government facilitates the private sector getting on and earning the tax revenues. And that's why we need to cooperate, consult, work with the private sector. That's what I've always done. That's my position. That's what I believe will be even more important in the time ahead.
Well, we talk about the economy, I think, in a little more depth, but at this stage in our discussion, we'll take a commercial break and we'll be back in 2 minutes. Don't go away.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
In today's constituency programme, we feature Douglas South and the three candidates for the two-seat constituency, Bill Mullarkey, David Cretney and Kate Beecroft. And we've been having a general conversation before we went into the break. But the one thing that's on top of everybody's mind and came out from under the conversation that we've been having earlier is a concern for the economy. Some people are concerned about its safety, and a number of people who are doing quite well are concerned that they keep it that way. Right. So that takes us to the question then that you mentioned 4 or 5% growth there, both of you did a short while ago. But to do Reagan economics, do you think that 5% growth is trickling down enough to the levels of our society?
Definitely
not. Are the benefits
not.
Of it?
Not always, no. There's no question. We have made great progress. You know, if you look at housing, for example, the housing when I was first elected in 85 was really bad in a number of areas, but there is still work to be done. Again, I heard David Christian speaking today. If you look around a number of these states which fall within this constituency, there's clearly work to be done there. I've picked that up when I've been around speaking to people. Clearly, of course, that's a local authority responsibility, but we need to work together with local authorities, because government makes up the deficiency, to make sure that work is progressed in that way.
Well,
and it's also good for, it's also good for the construction sector.
Exactly,
if we're going to keep the construction sector going, there's nothing better than bricks and mortar houses for our people. That's the most important area.
I think as well it's not trickling down to the elderly. I really have concerns for that. I mean, inflation is running at, 7.5% at the moment. The pensions are not going up by that rate. Those people are really, really feeling it. So, no, the growth is not trickling down as it should do.
I was thinking as well of things like the retail trade and various others.
Yes.
Because whilst other people are doing well, if there's an up, there must be a down somewhere.
Yes, indeed. I mean, construction, retail, there are a number of areas that have had a more difficult time latterly. And I'm sorry to keep referring back to this, but whilst I was Minister for Trade and Industry, I worked with representatives of those particular sectors and brought together government ministers to try and make sure that their sector was properly examined and was helped wherever possible. I'm presently chairman of the Regeneration Group in Douglas. That's one of the most important things. If you look at Douglas as town centre now, it's very tired looking, it's very drab in places. There is a real scheme now to revitalise that and to make the shopping area much more of a good experience for people to use it and for people who come to visit the island.
Do you think that will stop a lot of the internet shopping?
No.
Because at the moment we're about double what any other area in the UK is.
That's right. And the one thing about internet shopping, I guess, is it's good for the post office, for, you know. But yes, what the retailers need to do is they need to make sure that what their offer is what their customers want.
There's no doubt about it, the pound in the pocket today is worth a lot less than what it was 3 years ago. With inflation going forward and pay freezes, the pound is devaluing all the time in the pocket. So it's going to have to be accepted in certain sectors that, you know, this is going to carry on for a little while longer. Yes.
Well, if there's a downturn further, David already talked about increased employment figures, and the problem, of course, is that if things get tighter, that's a natural consequence of it. You referred also, Bill, in your manifesto to creating employment, but by government creating employment. There have been many schemes in the past to do this, but one of the dangers, of course, is that when the government grant money stops, the employment stops with it.
Yes, it's going to be a gradual stage going forward. From my suggestion of the manifesto would be with Job Seekers Allowance. I'm very much, my manifesto is about partnership with the private sector. That's the way forward for the future of the Isle of Man. The theme of my manifesto, the theme of what I've always said, government should govern and not run. We need the partnerships with the private sector. Now, we've got a lot of people, and again, mainly under 25s, who I see is going to be the big problem going forward for this island, because government's not employing fresh blood in. We are already creating more and more under 25s unemployed. Go into partnership with the private sector. Instead of giving the job seekers allowance to the person who's unemployed, give it to the private sector, let them match it, get people into jobs, give them work experience, because at the moment they're going for jobs, they can't get jobs because they've got no experience, yeah. and they are stuck in a cycle. We give the job seekers allowance to the private sector, they can then get half-price staffing, if you like. We can generate national insurance and maybe a little bit of income tax back into the government pot. We can regenerate the future generations going forward and give them some meaningful feeling that they're not just taking money off for nothing.
And that'll increase the skill base, will it, as well?
It will do, because we do it right across the private sector. I'm not talking about the scheme that we had for apprenticeships. I'm trying to bring these people into offices and to various other skills that are around the island and encourage them. It's to an employer, it's really cheap labour because the government is subsidising it. It can work. It will take a bit of working out, but I believe that is a good way forward, because otherwise we are really going to have problems with under 25s over the next few years, because not even government's taking them on.
How would you, David, over the next years, lessen the effects of unemployment and try and effectively reduce the numbers that might be coming out on this situation? Because the NEETS is an issue which he's referred to, which is lurking in the background, and it's dangerous, isn't it?
Not employment, education or training is an issue here. It's an issue across the water, and it is an issue that is being addressed by a cross-departmental working party and the third sector. The private sector, they're all working together on that, because it's been acknowledged that it's an area which requires attention, because once people don't get into the routine of work, then that's a downward spiral. And so I think what Bill's just suggested may have some legs. It may be that I think it's very important that we do work with the private sector, and if they can a partnership approach in terms of trying to assist people in that way, I would think that's something worthy of investigation.
But government has a great deal of staff at the moment, and there's a great deal of talk about reductions and by changes. The Liberal Party manifesto, Kate, states in one place that you wish to avoid redundancies in the public sector by redeploying personnel. But how can you do that? I mean, it's very difficult to take a fellow who might be a bus driver and give him a job in another department where the disciplines are so different.
Well, you can retrain people. That happens all the time. You can also go down the route of natural wastage, where people leave through retirement or because they're going into different employment in the private sector, or possibly leaving work to have because of family commitments or whatever. I would like to see the figures for when people are due to retire out of the civil servants and the public sector. to see how long it would take before it, the level of employment was at a reasonable level. But I think you've got to have a look at these things, but you don't want to cause pain where you don't have to. And there's no point putting people out of work if they're just going to be claiming benefit anyway. But I'd like to go back to the other bit that Bill was raising about creating more with the private sector. I totally agree we've got to work better with them and create more unemployment with the businesses that we have.
Employment.
Yeah, but yeah, but I think we've really got to try harder to attract more new business onto the island. I think one of those ways is, for example, we're losing a lot of business to places like Newcastle, where they have very fast-track planning if you're going to employ people. It's not a question of buying your way in, but I think there should be incentives offered for the NEETs as well, for people, for employers taking them on, where maybe they get a national insurance holiday, this sort of thing. You've got to create the incentives and the environment for local businesses already here and to attract new ones. We've got to bring in more employment opportunities.
Again, I heard one of the discussions the other night, Roger, and what somebody was saying was that he wanted to see more manufacturing going on the island. Mm. And I think the manufacturing sector is one of the island's best kept secrets, because if you look what's going on in that sector in terms of aerospace, technical optics, things that go on under the sea, for example, these are all high added value jobs, good jobs. And one of the things also about the manufacturing sector presently is there are a lot of people who are in their 50s, and so that's going to present a number of opportunities, provided we can try and guide young people and let them know that these are good, well-paid, good job opportunity, trying to encourage more people to go into that sector, and also encourage more businesses to establish themselves on the island in the high added value, because then if it's higher added value, it's not such an issue about the cost of transport to and from the island or the energy costs, which are obviously concerns for business at this time.
But then we have to diversify our business college so that we are catering for those people who are generating back work back into the Isle of Man.
Absolutely.
We need to diversify what we're actually offering as courses, e-gaming and things like that, to train these people up so that when these key companies want to come to the Isle of Man, we've got the facilities to train the staff up on island.
Well, that, of course, is often the argument for people who seek a work permit to bring somebody in, because the skill base is not here.
We need to address that.
Yes. But would you, therefore, bearing in mind you're talking about protecting unemployed, you're talking about making sure that as many people locally are either retrained or able to take up further employment, would you suggest that we revisit now the point system and the way the whole immigration system works in the Isle of Man? Should we be more selective on who we allow in?
I think that's a very good point, and I think we should. We should certainly have a sensible grown-up look at it. I've always been very proud the Isle of Man is not racist, but there are elements of
that
beginning.
This is not a matter of racism, this is a matter of numbers.
But because of this thing that people are coming over, taking our jobs, and we haven't got enough jobs here, there's resentment creeping in now. And from that, you can see how racism happens in the UK. I would hate the Isle of Man to come to that, because we're not racist over here.
We
never have been.
So what do we do about it then?
I would revisit the point system so that you know that everybody you see on the Isle of Man, you know they're here because we want them, we need their skills. That takes away the resentment.
If you've read my manifesto, which I know you will have done, Roger, I was the person who brought forward the Residence Act. Yeah. I still believe gateways for skills that are required for the Isle of Man is one of the ways forward. Yeah. I know that that Act is now going to be revisited, is in the process of being revisited, because there was concerns about possible implications of parts of it. And I understand that people are a bit cautious about that. But really, if we want certain skills, if there is a requirement here for certain skills, then those gateways should be open to facilitate business development. And at the same time, we need to continue to make sure we're training, as Bill's just said, training the right people in the right jobs for the future of the economy of the Isle of Man.
What about the people who are coming for a temporary job or a job that lasts about 5 years and then they're entitled to stay, which is not absolutely essential to the economy? They might come to work at a restaurant, or they may do something of this nature. Should we be more selective in putting it bluntly, like the Germans are, sending people back at the end of that period?
Well, in 2008, I asked the Chief Minister why we hadn't implemented the Residency Act that Dave was talking about. I believe then there was a time bomb kicking for the future, because in the boom doomed days of 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, when Manx people wouldn't do the mundane jobs, the cleaning jobs, the bar staff jobs, the hotel jobs. They were coming from all over England, Europe, to do these jobs on the island. I could see it happening, that when we suddenly take a downhill, these people would then be Manx citizens. And I wanted the Residency Act to be implemented so that make it 10 years, so that when we did go into recession, that these people would not be entitled to everything we have on the island. I know it's a little bit Manx. I'm sorry. The Chief Minister's reply to that was, what recession?
In the absence of the Residency Act, which, as you know, I'm a mm-hmm. supporter of, when I was Minister for Trade and Industry again, I'm sorry to keep harking back to that, but what we did do with the Work Permit Committee was we made sure that they were kept up to date with the accurate information about economic trends, about employment, where unemployment was going up in certain sectors, so that they could be more careful about permits that were being issued. Now, I've heard on the doorsteps when I've been going around that isn't always the case as far as the number of people. And so I'd like to look again at that in the time ahead, because the last thing we want to do is to go back to the 3,000 unemployed that we used to have. And I don't think there's any question any of us want to see that. And we all need to work for the good
of
the island to ensure it.
Can I say, you brought up the work permit system. I don't think that's working properly. I think there's two major flaws with that. One is they don't react quickly enough. If you're in the leisure industry, for example, if you know you've got a cafe or a pub or whatever, one of your staff walks out, you need somebody there and then. You need them tomorrow, if not today. You can't afford to wait as long as the work permit people take. And also, it's creating the people who are coming over here and taking the lower paid jobs, they're actually getting trapped in employment with that one employer, because they know now, because of the recession, it's not easy to move. And I know that there are unscrupulous employers out there who are taking advantage of these people.
In terms of the hospitality sector, we met specifically with representatives of that sector because that accusation that Kate's just raised, which I'm sure is genuine, in terms of turnover, in terms of the staff in and out. And we made it quite clear that a name was given to people within the hospitality sector, within the trade and industry department, to contact them if there were problems, so that they could be facilitated. Because the last thing we want to do was to cause problems.
Stifling a local industry, absolutely. Yes,
now,
exactly.
Look, I'd like to just move on to a couple more items before the programme comes to an end, because all of you, in one way and another, have highlighted concern, that's electorate's concern and your own concerns, about sometimes threats and sometimes problems with our essential services, the cost of electricity, the cost of gas, the cost of air flight, the cost of water these days even, and the cost of travel, particularly the steam packet on and off the Isle of Man. And the way that the steam packet has now become a commodity on the market. Now, all of you have highlighted that in some way or another, but Bill, you went a bit further by saying that you thought that Tidwell should resist the sale, any more sales of the steam packet, and revert it back to market share price. That would be very difficult, won't it?
No, because the price of the steam packet at the moment is the price of our user agreement. Our user agreement is the commodity on the stock market. I asked the directors, where do you get the price of £230 million for the steam packet where it has assets of less than £60 million? And they openly said, the user agreement. Now, if there's no user agreement, there's no price to the company.
But government can't renege, can it, on a deal it's struck?
It can't, but the point being of what will actually happen now is, going forward, the next 5 years, that the owners of the company will come forward and use the excuse that we want to buy new vessels, we need to go forward with the company. Can we have another 10 years on top? And then all they'll do is sell the company on and walk away from it.
So do you agree that would be the case, to safeguard the steam packet in the future for the Isle of Man, so it doesn't get shopped around in various banks in Europe or whatever, that in fact we should now limit the asset value of the company by the value of the government contract that is with it, David?
No, I don't. I'm not sure that we should be intervening in that way. What we have a contract. The contract is in place. I don't believe we can renegotiate that.
I didn't say you could, David. What I'm saying is, the contract has got no get-out clause in it. It's got no sell-on clause in it. The contract is absolutely so flawed that lots of people, except for the Manx people,
so if you
have made
elected,
a lot of money out of it.
Would you seek to try and have it renegotiated in some way?
That's another possibility. But what I'd really like to do is take the Isle of Man steam packet back into the ownership of people of the Isle of Man. It's our lifeline.
Nationalise it.
My suggestion would be to buy it through the public sector pension and let it be run as a successful company that it is. At the moment, it's serving loans and interest on £200 million.
To buy it back, you'd actually be paying market price because their shareholders,
The market price would be down to the value of the company as long as the user agreement has got no more extensions on it.
Yeah, but you're not...
It's not going to happen in the next five years.
Just pay attention, because I think we got what you were saying there, but what we say, Kate...
Yeah, I mean, it's up to the market to decide what value the steam packet shares are. And I don't think it's viable to be buying those shares back. If it was a fire sale or something, you could think about it. But at the moment, no. I would prefer to see a new deep water link span constructed somewhere else on the island. We've got vessels going back and forward all the time in the Irish Sea that can't come into our harbour.
But would this not then mean that the basic company might end up by being in difficulties?
I'm
saying if you did this, you're suggesting competition might be...
Yes, competition's always good. Well, and where you've got the user agreement, which has tied us up to 2026, I mean, that's just crazy.
I think government shouldn't have done it in the first place.
We've got just a couple of minutes to go now in the programme, so I really should ask you all the inevitable question, because you're all be seeking a cross against your name on the paper in a matter of a very few weeks now. So could I perhaps go back in reverse alphabetical order and ask you all why the worthy citizens of Douglas South should invest one of their two votes with you, Bill?
Well, I think I've worked extremely hard in South Douglas. I've certainly very committed. I think my record since leaving the Liberal Vanden Party has proven that. I promise that I will serve the people of South Douglas extremely hard over the next 5 years. I believe that they are going to be difficult times, but I think I'm the right person for the job because I've done my apprenticeship. It's payback time.
Same question to you, David.
For experience, common sense and honesty and 100% commitment for South Douglas and our island, please vote David Cretney, the man you know and trust.
And Kate Beecroft.
Because voting for Liberal Vanin is the only way to bring about the change. And just voting for the same people again, just it's going to bring you more of the same, and you don't want that. We've proved what we can do with one MHK. Let us prove what we can do with a team in there.
And we've run out of time, so we must end this election programme in which we featured the candidates for Douglas South in the 2011 general election. There were Kate Beecroft, David Cretney and Bill Mullarkey. In the next programme, at the same time, Beth Espy will meet the four candidates for Douglas West. The constituency profile was by Dan Walker. The programme was produced by Catherine Nicol and Alex Brindley. And I'm Roger Watterson. Until we next meet, goodbye.